Live in Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And we're two of the crew members from Warbird Rescue. Call in Thursday nights at 8 Eastern to join the lively discussion of Warbird restoration. Find out how we can put you in touch with a Warbird project in your area. And be sure to visit us online at warbirdrescue.com.
That's warbirdrescue.com.
And we'll talk to you Thursdays at 8 right here on Warbird Radio.
Now showing on aerocinema.com.
1944. The English Channel is all that stands between a massive land invasion into Hitler's Europe. The Allies are poised and ready to make the crossing, and the Nazis are desperate to repel them. Using new technology and innovative concepts, the Luftwaffe will summon forth a dive bomber unique in looks and abilities. This will be their shield to defend against the flood of ships bound for German territory. A Pair of Hunchbacks, Part 1.
What a kick to be part of Warbird Radio with Big Band Jump, heard several times each week. I'm Don Kennedy, host of BBJ, inviting you to tune in, take off with Warbird Radio.
Live from the land of the free, because of the brave, this is Warbird Radio.
Yep, if you're hearing harmonicas, you're on with the Wix Warbird Weekly Live. Ladies and gentlemen, it is Wednesday, April 13th, and you're listening to us live here on Warbird Radio. I'm Ryan Keough, and as always, every week, joining me, my Wix co-conspirator, Zane Adams, moderator on the Wix forums. Zane, what's up?
Well, the sun's still up here.
Well,
and it is in your part of the world as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the sun's up 365 days a year here in sunny Arizona. So,
yeah, there you go. There
take that, go. Seattle.
Zing. Yeah. Oh, doing well. Getting ready for Air Power Expo 2011 at NAS JRB Fort Worth, which is the old Carswell Air Force Base. It comes online this weekend as a Tier 1 Centennial of Naval Aviation event. Easy for me to say, but so looking forward to seeing how many of these vintage painted static warbirds come in for static, or military airplanes come in for static, and Blue Angels are here, or Kavanaugh Flight Museum's going to do some flying. And heard rumor there's going to be a P-47 parachute drop possibly during the weekend, and so it ought to be fun.
A P-47 parachute?
No, C-47.
Oh my god! I was going to say usually there's only one person in that, and if
yeah, sorry, Zach, I didn't mean to give Zach a heart attack there. If he's listening, so no C-47. Yeah.
So, Zach, go eat some more cheese and drink some more beer. You'll be fine. The pains will go down in a few seconds. So. Wow. Yeah. C-47 drop is great. That's fantastic to see and stuff. And, you know, especially if they're using the old style chutes, or at least the 50s chutes, the straight chutes, non-controllable and stuff. Of course, it's a little bit more dangerous. And, you know, I realize that that's a reason why they're not using it. But anyways, I could see it being kind of cool and stuff. We've got actually one of your hometown warbirds out here in the Phoenix area. We've got the B-29 Fifi is here in at Deer Valley Airport in the north side of Phoenix, and they're going to be giving rides. Looks like through Thursday, and they may have something available on Friday as well. But they've got the airplane on static display along with the B-17 Sentimental Journey and the B-25 Made in the Shade from the Commemorative Air Force Arizona wing here in Mesa, Arizona. Again, that's up at Deer Valley Airport in North Phoenix, Arizona, and it's part of their tour that they made out here to Bullhead City, Laughlin area for the weekend, although some weather kept them on the ground in Tucson. They had to divert to Tucson before they went up to Bullhead City, so they never made it up to Bullhead City until Sunday, unfortunately, because of the weather that we had coming through the area, but they were up there through Monday and came down here on Tuesday, and it seems like the airplane's performing well. And I got to get myself out there tomorrow before I miss it yet again. So hopefully,
yeah, I think you need to go over and see Master Sergeant Pilgrim out there, as he's hanging out with the B-29.
That is true.
If you're by there, everybody tell him hello, and you know, tell him wish him well and. His last few months in Oklahoma, so yeah, or last year anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Good. I'm sorry about that.
You okay there?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I got a little avgas down my wrong pipe here. But
okay.
But for those of you that are listening tonight, give us a call here tonight. I might not be able to talk after a little bit if I have the same kind of drink ingestion habits that I've had here. But give us a call tonight. The phone lines are open. The number is 478-787-4768. Again, 478-787-4768 to reach us here and chat a little bit of Warbirds or any of the topics that you'd like to talk about from the Wix Warbird Forum this week, which kind of goes into a couple of the pieces that I've gleaned off of the site from the past week that's been kind of neat to see. You were speaking about naval aircraft earlier on. It looks like the former Lex DuPont FM-2 Wildcat, now owned by the Fighter Factory / Military Aviation Museum in Virginia, is now flying. They actually had it up in the air. They had done engine run-ups earlier this season in November. But of course, it gets a little bit cold in Virginia and such. So sure. Got the airplane up in the air. Looks absolutely spectacular. It's got a great, seldom seen tricolor Navy color scheme on it, especially for Wildcats, and really looks stunning. And compared to what it looked like before, I mean, not saying that Mr. DuPont, kept it in great mechanical condition, but boy, it definitely had the war-weary look before. but it absolutely looks beautiful, beautiful. So I'm so glad to see that up in the air again. And it looks like it'll be making one of its air show appearances at the Thunder Over Michigan show, which will be good. And, sure. Hopefully we might see it up at the Mid-Atlantic Air Museum show. Who knows how that'll go. So we'll see how it all plays out. And I'm betting on Geneseo or maybe even Oshkosh. I don't know.
Yeah, most likely. All those East Coast shows, they're bound to show it off. You know, Jerry likes to show his stuff off, and it is indeed a beautiful airplane. So it's exciting to see another Wildcat up in the air. Mm-hmm. You know, there seems like there was a lot of Wildcats for a long time, and then they've kind of gone by the wayside. We lost a few, and they've just kind of been, I guess there's a few out in restoration and kind of hanging in the wings. But it's good to see another one up flying. So.
Oh, absolutely. Well, there's going to be, we know that there's going to be probably about three of them coming down the pipeline in the near future, sitting out at Uvalde, Texas. Three airframes are being worked on, and we get occasional updates on those project airplanes, but it seems like things are going along pretty solidly with those restorations, and hopefully we'll see those at least coming out of the shop within the next couple of years. So certainly the Wildcat population is definitely increasing. I remember seeing the Wildcat that was restored by Daryl Skurich's shop up in Colorado. It was on the market for a good 3 years, it seemed like. Now, granted, it had modern avionics and such inside, so it wasn't so authentic inside, but it certainly looked the part on the outside, and it just sat there, and it was one of those kind of forgotten warbirds that everybody wants a P-51 or everybody wants a Bearcat, but nobody seemed to be grabbing at the Wildcat, and all of a sudden it's become a pretty popular little warbird. So I'm glad to see that it's finally getting its just rewards again in the air show circuit. So and then also coming from Granite Falls, Minnesota, by way of a little bit further south down at Tri-State Aviation, another airplane that we haven't seen in flying condition for a great many years, the P-51 44-63-864, which for those of you who know your P-51 lingo, that is the P-51D Twilight Tier that is owned by Ron Fagan of Granite Falls, Minnesota. And that took to the air for the first time this past week, it looks like. it was reported on Wix, and I personally haven't seen any photos of it yet, but that was definitely a long-term restoration project that brings a combat veteran P-51 back up in the air again. It had three confirmed kills, two of an ME-262 and one of a Messerschmitt 109 by Hubert Davis, who flew it during World War II. So it's great to see a combat veteran back up in the air again. And of course, Fagan does a great job with his restorations, and Tri-State has always done a fantastic job. So those two combined together makes for a fantastic airplane. So can't wait to see that on the air show circuit. And I have a feeling that one's probably going to be at Oshkosh. It's probably going to be sitting on the judges' row, let's just say. So.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it at all. It's great to see another Mustang, and I know people say, oh, another Mustang. But this one's, like you said, it's truly historic. It's an airframe that's been there and done that, so they say, and it's great to have it up in the air, mm-hmm. where it belongs, of course, but...
It's definitely, it's definitely probably, fair to say that, it's been a kind of a tough couple of years. I haven't seen a heck of a lot of stuff coming out, but I think this is going to be the year, because we're beginning to already see these airplanes being load up. We've got some restorations that are coming down the pipe, airplanes that are getting in the air and going on tour that we've never seen before. I really think this is the turnaround year for the Warbird market, I think. And I think that, quite frankly, if you haven't already made those plans to go out and start on a restoration project of your own, be it an L2 all the way up to a T6 and to a P-51, whatever your dreams are, this is the time to buy before it gets too hard, to find projects and pieces. And I think that this is going to be the year to do that before too long. So, just a little hint to those out there. I'm not the prognosticator. My SEC credentials say that I can't make any forward thinking statements on this.
Oh, you can't. Huh?
Yeah, okay. I can't. Because the Warbird, the stock in Warbird Radio goes up, and then I get accused of insider trading. No. That's not the case at all. Well,
go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just another little piece of news from the, and it's from the Wix forum, is the Myers Motors over in southern Germany. The big beautiful doll P-51 arrived there. I don't know exactly what they're going to do with it, but it's in beautiful shape, and beautiful photographs of it arriving there in Germany at Myers Motors out there, which is the restoration shop of note in at least Central Europe. And it's good to see that airplane flying around over there in Europe as well. It looks gorgeous if you get on the Wix forum and see the photos there.
Yeah, that's one of the that's becoming one of the great things about Wix, is that it's kind of still the place where people can safely put their project photos and stuff, and it's kind of like Facebook but a little bit more protected and stuff, and it goes to the right community of people that appreciate this kind of thing. And I'm glad that the folks from Meyer Motors have allowed one of our members the access and the ability to post pictures of the projects and such on there, because it's an area that we don't get a chance to see very often. It's much like the photos of the P-61 Black Widow that one of our members posted a couple of years ago when he visited Beijing, China. These are things that we don't see in the mainstream publications on a regular basis, and now all of a sudden people can go online and look at it, in its normal environment. And heck, it's just as easy as Facebook, and just as timely. So,
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Plus, you don't have to worry about playing, having all these invitations from Farmville or Cafe World or all these other stupid things. We should create a Warbird based app, call it Restoration. And all that you do is just throw money into something.
call Zynga. I bet they would put it together for you.
Oh, maybe.
If they could sell gift cards for it, sure.
Yeah, but then it would take away everybody's time and money to actually do the real life restorations. Let's put it toward the real life.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And speaking of that, I want to make a little bit of a plug. Wix, for those of you who are members of Wix and who have been on the forum for years, it has traditionally been a little bit more difficult to post pictures because you had to have some sort of an off-site account on PhotoBucket or some other web hosting service that allowed you to put pictures on a forum off of your domain. Well, Wix is now offering a more of an exclusive for folks to become premier subscribers to Wix for a small donation of only $2 a month as a basic subscription. Comes right out of PayPal and such. If you want to go to Wix and take a look at the why should you subscribe to Wix post that Scott has put up at the top of the page. Basically, we have now got the ability to place photos attachments right directly into your posts, so you don't have to go and upload them someplace else and refer to the URL and refer to the photo on your own computer. You can just upload it directly to the site and have it display immediately. So and it helps keep the Wix forum going. It helps it helps pay our bills when it comes to the bandwidth and everything that keeps the site running. And of course, it's always appreciated. And it's not a donation per se, but none of us get paid from this. It just goes right back into the web hosting fund. Lord knows if we could pay Zane to put up with all of the abuse that he gets on a regular basis, we would.
That'd be great.
Yeah. But we're not going to. So.
No, of course not. No, I think it'd be money well spent. $2 a month. If everybody, we've got, I don't know, golly, how many registers do we have? Have on there? 4,000 or so.
Mm-hmm.
If every one of those gave $2, then Scott would be in high cotton, and I think the Warbird Registry would blow our mind. And if that's one of the deals that Scott wants to do, if there's enough funding and to that comes into this to pay for Wix, and anything over that funding that pays for the forum upkeep and the servers and all that, he has some great plans for the Warbird Registry. Which is an invaluable resource on the web for these airplanes, and it needs expanding, it needs work, and it's going to take a little bit of cash to do that as well, to for some software and that kind of stuff. So anything that we can do to help Scott and further that effort, I think it's well worth the money. So.
Absolutely, and for the not to sound like a public radio fund drive, but for less than the cost of a magazine per year, you can support Wix and post pictures and be part of one of the best forums on the web, supported by Warbird Radio, and this great show it's the primary point of information coming from the Warbird community, at least in the forum sense, and you can do your part and help us out. So
there if you want, for $100 a month, Scott will gladly send you a Wix coffee mug.
Yeah. I thought it was the tote bag myself.
Oh, well, maybe, but yeah.
It had better be the signed one, for goodness sakes.
Yeah. I imagine he'll sign that for $100 a month.
For $200 a month, you get my joke reel, which is not worth the $200 a month. No. Oh, anyways, but we're again, if you want to give us a call tonight, where the lines are definitely open. It's 21 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to Wix Warbird Weekly Live here on Wednesday, April 13th. And we'd love to take your call tonight, 478-787-4768. Again, 478-787-4768. We'll get you into the studio, and we'd love to hear from you out there and hear any news or comments that you might have. Hey, any restoration projects you've got going on? Anything new and exciting in your neck of the woods when it comes to Warbirds, we'd love to hear from you on that. To kind of get started, before we get a call here, kind of get started on one of the more contentious topics
that
came over the Wix forum, and it's technically not a Warbird in the most ultimate sense, but there is no doubt that the U.S. space program, NASA and its predecessors, the orbiter, the shuttle orbiter, had a significant amount of influence from the United States military. Pilots, cr- crew members came from the military in the early days. Many of our crew members today are, you know, former military, active military members. The shuttle orbiter has carried military satellites and payload. And so it certainly is a part of the aviation history of the United States. And certainly the space program itself is a pretty significant part of the whole story of military aviation in the United States. Well, yesterday the folks at NASA announced their decision as to where, the space shuttles will go after their retirement for final deposition and for final display. And of course, the Smithsonian was on there with the National Air and Space Museum. It was a foregone conclusion. Everybody knew that this was going to happen, so the Smithsonian is definitely in there. And they will be accepting, I believe, Discovery. And then the Kennedy Space Center, which obviously for reasons we don't need to go into, will be getting one for display. It is the home of the shuttle, so obviously it belongs there. But the other two locations, some people have had some pretty significant opinions either way on, which would be the Intrepid Air and Space Museum in New York City on the USS Intrepid, which is now an aviation museum of all sorts, right, pretty much accessible from the heart of Manhattan. And then the other being the California Science Center in Los Angeles, California, which was a real surprise to many people. And that is the only West Coast position of the space shuttle. Pretty much, you know, everything else is on the East Coast. So there are some, you know, pretty passionate folks that are upset for the fact that the Midwestern United States has been pretty much left out of the equation. The folks at Wright-Patterson and the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force obviously did not get one. The folks up in Seattle, Tillamook, and well, not Tillamook, but McMinnville, they didn't receive one. They were on the list as well, and of course, Johnson Space Center down in Houston, Texas, which is the what you would call the home of the astronauts, that didn't receive it. So very, very, you know, a lot of people are very concerned about, you know, why do all the, you know, most of the shuttles have to be on the East Coast? So we'd love to hear your inputs on this one. It certainly is making its rounds on Wix, but we'd love to hear your comments on it as well tonight. And I've got my own too, but I'll wait till after the break to get on my soapbox on that one.
You know, it is one of the biggest. It's the biggest story in our aviation sphere. You know, the on the aviation forums and these kinds of things. It's quite the buzz, and it's created quite a bit of controversy. Some of these site selections, or at least two of them have. Two of them, like you said, Kennedy and the National Air and Space Museum are givens. You know, I believe. You know, and I don't know why didn't they send one to Johnson Space Center down there in Houston? They've got a nice space center that's a historical place. It's got a fair amount of tourism because of NASA there, and NASA, you know, has their space center there. You know, the Saturn V rockets are there. They've been in, you know, one of those has been enclosed out, you know, and they've just they've got the Mission Control Center, which is a National Historic Site. I mean, there's a lot going on in Houston, and I'm biased because it's only, you know, 250 miles down the road. But I'm just surprised that there's not one. You know, there's three on the East Coast and one on the West Coast, and then all us that live out here in the middle are kind of, some of us are kind of miffed, I guess you might say. You know, so you know, New York's got a lot going for it. I understand that. It's a huge draw. It's maybe NASA thought it would be seen by more people in New York, you know, because they've got to have some huge funding to be able to do it on the Intrepid. You know, I just hope they don't stick it on a barge like they did the Concorde, you know, mm-hmm. on the river, you know, I mean, so yeah,
that's one of the things that I'm most concerned with. I mean, obviously transportation is going to be a little bit easier. It's going to be able to be flown into Kennedy. Probably it's going to be able to be rolled a very short distance to the intercoastal waterway area. And then put on a barge and then, you know, brought up the river and then, you know, lifted off the barge and such. So I guess logistically it's a little bit easier, but still, I mean, there's enough in New York City, folks. mean, you've got the Statue of Liberty. You've got, you know, the Empire State Building. You've got the Intrepid itself. I mean, my goodness, that's a huge museum, and it's a great place. There's a lot there. And, you know, it, focus on, you know, parts of aviation. That's a fantastic thing. But, you know, again, people, you know, that are on the East Coast that get a chance to go see the Intrepid, they most likely have the ability to go down to the Smithsonian as well and see it at the Udvar-Hazy Center. So my thought is that, you know, it really is overkill, I mean, for that area. But of course, you know, there's talk of, you know, well, there's some pretty significant clout in New York City, and yeah. You know, that's, and of course, when it comes to funding the future space program, you got to keep people happy. And so, one of the major population centers is New York City, and then the other one is Los Angeles. And so, you know, that certainly is probably a part of it, but Houston is nothing to shake a stick at. I mean, that's a very good sized city. Texas itself is huge.
Yeah, we're growing all the time down here. And, you know, and it just blows my mind that, you know, New York and Washington, D.C. are, they're 200 and some odd miles apart there. You know, that just seems like, you know, really close. I know you've got huge populations there, you know, but like somebody said, huge populations, if you put it in Dayton at the National Air, or the National Museum of the Air Force, you know, what do they say, 60% of the country's population lives within 4 hours of Dayton or something like that, you know, so, or within a day's drive of Dayton. So, you know, there's a lot, you know, that's closer to Chicago, that's, you know, closer to the Midwest, et cetera, you know, or is in the Midwest. But I just think, you know, geographically speaking, someplace other than 2 hours apart on the East Coast would have been a better choice.
But, mm-hmm. Absolutely. Know. Absolutely. Well, I mean, we're certainly going to be talking more about this after the break. We're going to take a quick break in a few minutes here. But, you know, we would love to hear your calls here this evening. Again, give us a call, 478-787-4768. Again, 478-787-4768. Give us your opinion on what you think of the space shuttle deposition, and anything related to Warbirds. You know, how maybe even the space shuttle connected you to Warbirds. I know it certainly was one of my inspirations to get into Warbirds as a young kid, and we'll talk a little bit more about that after the break on that one. So, you know, we'd love to hear from you again, 478-787-4768, with your calls, and we would love to hear from you on that. And you know, again, you know, it's a part of history that unfortunately we've only got two space shuttle launches left. You know, and people are going to be, you know, very, very limited in terms of being able to see it. So seeing it in a proper place after they have been retired and you know, cared for, obviously, very, very high importance to us that are aviation enthusiasts and historians alike. I know just about every single Warbird person out there still has respect for the space program, and it's something that that we all kind of you know, enjoy, certainly. And you know, I hate to see you know, such a strange set of decisions. You know, of course we got to go along with it because it's NASA and it's pretty much a final decision, but
sure.
But still, you know, we can have our opinions on that one. So but we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with you here in about 2 minutes. Again, 478-787-4768 if you want to connect with us. It is the Wix Warbird Weekly live show on April 13th.
Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Log on now to FightingColors.com. That's FightingColors.com for more on Gary Velasco and his amazing nose art. That's FightingColors.com.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Rob.
And we're two of the crew members from Warbird Rescue. Call in Thursday nights at 8 Eastern to join the lively discussion of Warbird restoration. Find out how we can put you in touch with a Warbird project in your area. And be sure to visit us online at WarbirdRescue.com.
That's WarbirdRescue.com.
And we'll talk to you Thursdays at 8 right here on Warbird Radio.
Now showing on AeroCinema.com.
1944. The English Channel is all that stands between a massive land invasion into Hitler's Europe. The Allies are poised and ready to make the crossing, and the Nazis are desperate to repel them. Using new technology and innovative concepts, the Luftwaffe will summon forth a dive bomber unique in looks and abilities. This will be their shield to defend against the flood of ships bound for German territory. A Pair of Hunchbacks, Part 1.
What a kick to be part of Warbird Radio with Big Band Jump, heard several times each week. I'm Don Kennedy, host of BBJ, inviting you to tune in, take off with Warbird Radio.
Live from the land of the free, because of the brave, this is Warbird Radio.
Folks, you're back with Wix Warbird Weekly Live here on Warbird Radio. It's April 13th, 2011, and you're listening to us live if you're listening to us on that date at around 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We're back with you here tonight. We're talking about Warbirds. We're talking about anything on the Wix forums, and we're actually talking a little bit about more modern Warbird. The space shuttle final resting places were announced this week by NASA. And very, very contentious topic on Wix, and we'd love to hear from you, you folks out there, and you know, get your opinions on what you think. You know, the real story should have been, and the real location should have been. And you know, of course, we're going to give you our opinions here too, because none of us are shy over here at Wix and Warbird Radio. So hey, you know,
no, we're not afraid to voice our opinion.
No. But anyways, give us a call here, 478-787-4768. Again, 478-787-4768 to give us a call here and chat. And we'll be chatting about a couple of other Warbird-related topics a little bit later in the show too, including some new finds. You know, getting back on the shuttle piece, I want to give a bit of a shout-out on this one. I'll be very brief, like I always am.
Yeah, sure.
You know, I really, really am disappointed that Dayton and the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force did not receive a shuttle. And the reason for this is that I believe, and, you know, and just about any historian out there and any museum archivist or curator will believe this too, is that half of the success of being able to educate the population about a specific artifact, which the shuttle is a very large one, is being able to interpret it through the progression and the evolution of the aircraft or the piece by supporting other artifacts around it, you know, be it other aircraft, early development aircraft, all the way through. And don't get me wrong, the Smithsonian absolutely has all this. They've got the X-1. They've got, you know, everything that pretty much built the space program from the very get-go as much as they possibly could there. And so they can certainly interpret the history of Discovery as it's sitting there. But can the other museums do this? You know, other than Kennedy, obviously. But can the Intrepid really do this? Can the California Science Museum truly do this? I can't think of a place better than the National Museum of the U.S. Air Force to be able to do this, because really, you know, it was the early space program was really built by Air Force pilots and, you know, early rocketry. I mean, heck, Cape Canaveral was a part of the Missile Command. And to leave a museum that had such strong supporting artifacts around it that really can tell the story of the evolution of the space shuttle out of the, you know, to leave that out of the picture and to have a big gaping hole, you know, in that collection up there, I think is very, very tough. In recent years, the Air Force Museum has really had some fantastic finds. They've been able to get several, you know, very, very important airplanes, you know, back under their care, being the B-17D swoosh from the Smithsonian and the Memphis Belle, the original Memphis Belle B-17. But those are World War II airplanes. And, of course, there's tons more that they have that are still awaiting, you know, final restoration and such. And they've got a fantastic collection to begin with. But, again, I think it's a really, really tough deal that they didn't get a real crack at it. Because, you know, Dayton was the birthplace of aviation. And honestly, I think the Air Force Museum was a great place to put it. So that's my soapbox.
I agree, and you know, and it's funny, you know, if it's Discovery we're talking about, I think it's Discovery. You know, there's some talk that Discovery was originally a DOD, a military, you know, contracted shuttle. You know, that it was, I guess it was originally planned to deliver to Vandenberg Air Force Base back mm-hmm. in the 80s, you know, and it just, you know, and they had to, they used it, you know, after after Challenger, you know, of course, and they were ahead of that, but it was still, it was meant to be, you know, originally a military shuttle, and so many military missions were flown. We still don't know what a lot of them did. You know, we know which ones they were because NASA said this is a, we can't tell you the launch time because it's a military mission. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of those going on. And I think, you know, the military history on the shuttle is big enough that I agree. I think Dayton would have been a great place for it from the aviation standpoint, from the military aviation standpoint, for the, you know, of course, I guess there's been a few sailors that flown for yep. NASA as well
yeah,
over the years.
But, Marine Corps, yeah.
There's some of those, but it has had its military missions, and I agree. I think if Johnson didn't get it, Texas base bias there, but if Johnson didn't get it, I think Dayton was probably the best place for it. And,
absolutely.
You know, I'm a little surprised that, you know, I know California's got a huge aviation history. You know, everything moved west back in the 20s and 30s and, you know, and 40s and everything. And, you know, the shuttles were built out there basically by Rockwell and everything, but it just, you know, that museum, I don't think is the place for it in California either. And, you know, LA has its trouble. LA's, you know, a big city. It's got everything going for it, but, you know, I mean, they have a hard time holding on to an NFL team, for God's sake. So, yeah. You know, it's just one of those things that you think about, you know, it's the aviation industry is moving away from LA and, you know, it'll be history there, I think, eventually. And, you know, I know the California Museum out there has, California Science Center has an Apollo Soyuz capsule from one of those missions, and it's got one of the Mercury capsules, I believe, so, or a Gemini capsule there. So, you know, they do have some NASA gear on the ground there in the museum, but, you know, I wish them well with it, but I just don't know if it was right place there or New York. So
yeah. And of course, you know, for the folks that live, I mean, we talk about being able to spread the history across the United States. I mean, granted, you know, what are your options when it comes to Mid-America? You know, where are you going to put it and stuff? I mean, the Chicago Science Museum is just a breathtaking facility up there. Now, I'm not sure if they were in the running, but, you know, they're, you know, Central America, you know, all Central United States, I should say, and accessible to people in the Midwest. And you know, now it's like, well, okay, people are going to have to come over the East Coast primarily, or are they going to go all the way over to California just to see the shuttle there at that one location over there? You know, that's the one question that I have in it. But I guess for me, it really boils down to can the other artifacts support it, and does it really tell the story? Because who knows? In another generation, it'll be sitting in there like every other airplane that's collecting dust in museums, you know, certain museums around the country, and without the context, what tells the story of this early part of this very pivotal part of the space program that unfortunately was beset with some, you know, pretty significant setbacks with two pretty major accidents, but overall was a very, very successful program. That's our opinion.
There you go. And we're sticking to it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And the horse is not dead yet, but you know, there are no animals harmed in this show tonight. So,
but it is a hot topic on the Wix board. It went to three pages in a heartbeat, you know, or mm-hmm. four pages now, I guess it is. But, yeah, it, you know, it's one of those deals that, it's, people got their opinions on it, and, I agree with a lot of people's say so.
I like the idea that, you know, somebody put up there, you know, give it to the Collings Foundation, have them, you know, trade it for an F-105, and I'm like, hey, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Although I
think old Rick Harris could find the fuel money for that. Yeah.
I don't know. That would be, you know, I could see him, you know, well, the tetrahydrochloride. We gotta put the liquid oxygen up. Oh God, I can only hear it. Oh. Yeah. Anyways, but give us a call here, folks. 478-787-4768. Again, 478-787-4768. If you want to join in the conversation and give us a, you know, let us know what's going on in your neck of the woods with warbirds these days as well. So before we get started on the next one, I'd also like to plug one more thing. For our great sponsor here, who's been wonderful to work with and has put up with our shenanigans every Wednesday night here, Warbird Radio. Warbird Radio has got a short survey that they've put on their website that they'd like to hear from their listeners as to basically who you are, what kind of things, what kind of person are you, that kind of thing, just to get a little bit more information about who's listening to the shows and that kind of thing. So go to warbirdradio.com and go over to the right-hand side of the page, and you'll see a link right underneath the Listen Live button at the top. You'll see a link right underneath that says, go take our quick survey. It takes it's 10 questions, and it took about 2 minutes for me, I think it was,
yeah,
but
there's
a lot of information as to, who are the kind of folks that are out there and what you'd like to see on Warbird Radio in the future. So go again to warbirdradio.com and click on the survey link underneath the Listen Live button and fill it out. Let us know. So my little plug there on that one too.
Yeah. If you want to do another plug for Matt and Warbird Radio, look for the swag button under info, and he's got hats and patches for sale too, so check those out.
That's right. I gotta get one of those, put on my jet jammies. So
yeah, there you go.
I don't wear hats because it screws up my hair, but
I wear hats because I don't have enough hair.
Oh. You haven't started we haven't started the Warbird Hair Club for Men yet, so that's
right. Yeah.
We use Nomex instead of hair.
yeah, exactly. Skull caps are it. Yeah.
Well, it's just frayed Nomex. That's what it is. You know? Anyways, well, Zane, you got some news that came from our folks over the pond. I noticed here.
Yeah, words was coming out this weekend or last weekend that a Doinier 17, a DO-17, was found just off the coast of Britain in about in the English Channel, about 50 feet deep in the water, and it's seems to be a complete airframe. They've got some radar and some other sonar equipment that have taken pictures of the airframe, and it is laying on its back in the mud, but apparently it's basically intact. Maybe the nose is damaged some and the propellers are gone, but other than that, apparently it's still got air in the tires, and I don't know exactly what the plans are. I don't think they've gone that far yet, but it would be very interesting to have that thing to pulled up, and RAF Museum in Hendon maybe leading the charge on that. We will see what the future holds for that airplane. It'd be quite interesting to see what it comes up with. The flying pencil, it may be the last one left in the world. So
you talk about an airplane. I mean, it's certainly a rare bird. I mean, all German birds are rare, I've found, but wow, this is a pretty significant find. We haven't seen one of these intact yet. Obviously they were used in significant numbers in the Battle of Britain, and certainly there were parts and pieces that were falling into the channel. So it was certainly a foregone conclusion that there's something there. But of course, it's been tough to find, and I think this is a real testament, I think, to the technology that's being used these days to find warbirds in these conditions and places. I mean, we saw it recently with the recovery of the SB2C Hell Diver from Otay Lake Reservoir in San Diego, and we saw it with the refinding of the Devastator off the coast of San Diego again. But the technology of sonar to be able to render images that pretty much are about as true to form as you can possibly get. I mean, there's no doubt when you look at the 3D sonar imaging that they've pulled up, there's no doubt that it is a DO-17. And, the fact that they were able to find this, it's like a needle in a haystack when it comes right down to it. And it's great to be able to survey locations and to be able to, especially when they're under thousands of feet of water, hundreds of feet of water, and being able to, possibly recover them. Because, again, we're getting close to that time when materials are starting to break down. It's been 60 plus years since the end of the war, and we are beginning to see a lot of the stuff, you know, starting to wither away. Some of the ships from, you know, in the South Pacific that were downed are beginning to leak oil because of the fact that their hulls are being breached because they're just rotting through. I mean, it's corrosion at work, and you know, if these airplanes aren't pulled up any time in the near future, they're probably going to be lost to the elements very, very shortly. So I certainly think that that this is something that we need to you know, make sure that we continue with archaeology groups and you know, find these airplanes now before before they're lost. So but you know, of course, you know, the RAF museum, non-flying museum, we're not sure if they will restore this thing or if it will be, you know, preserved in state and displayed like this, because obviously when in condition like this, the chances of restoring it with original parts are, you know, slim to none. So it would be pretty much, you know, a rebuilding of an airplane using new parts. But, you know, we shall see. Time will only tell. And, of course, they have yet to get down there and see it. So
right. Well, and what's amazing about this, in especially this find, and it's to me, it's amazing sometimes how well documented the war in Europe is. They actually think they know which airplane this is. Mm-hmm. I think they're pretty sure of it, you know, that it it was shot down and it ditched, made an emergency landing on the sands there at low tide. And when the tide came in, it ended up flipping over and you know, sunk in the sand. Mm-hmm. And so I think they know who was flying it. They may know the number of the airplane. They, you know, they know a lot about this. And I think it's like you said, the technology is there, but the records that go along with this and the research that they've done is amazing on this airplane. And I, you know, the RAF Museum wants to bring it up and wants to display it as part of their Battle Britain display. So, you know, I mean, I don't know exactly what that means, but they're looking for cash to do this with, too, as well. So yeah. It always takes money. But you're right, the amazing technology to find these things and for us to look at them. You know, if we can find pictures out there, there's a link on the Wix forum to the Daily Mail online newspaper that's got photographs of this thing. You know, their 3D radar and I guess it's sonar and thermal imaging. It's just, it is amazing. It's mm-hmm. amazing, and it needs to come up pretty soon, like you said.
Yeah,
it will disappear. So
that's true. Well, you know, and I noted on the thing that it was lost in the emergency landing on the Goodwin Sands, which is also the location. You know, the Goodwin Sands are huge. I mean, this is a huge tidal sandbank. Along the channel, so obviously there are a lot of possible airplanes that are in that area, but the Goodwin Sands also are where the P-38 that was found a couple of years back started washing up, and
right.
It's been protected, but it has not been recovered yet because, again, lack of cash. So, you know, this is an area that is a potential, you know, treasure trove that they've got that must be somehow funded to be able to get this stuff up. Now, of course, you know, we're in the middle of a bit of an economic crisis. Yeah, you know, it might take a little while, but Lord knows if anybody can do it, the British can do it. They got the Vulcan flying again. That was,
oh yeah,
you know,
oh,
so
yeah.
That's a lot of money that put into the coffers for that. So certainly this is a worthy exercise to be able to get that together and such. So who knows? And of course, you know, with the technology of being able to bring these aircraft back up and the recovery technology using, you know, advanced air systems and cranes and barges and such, you know, this is probably the best time ever to be able to do this kind of thing because, you know, we've got the, as they said in the $6 million man, you know, we have the technology now.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And like you said, and the preservation they've done, and I know it's a different animal, but the rebuilding of some of these airplanes, you know, like the Glacier Girl P-38, you know, to be able to rebuild something from what's there, you know, I know it's not all original, it's not the same airplane, the same skins and everything that were lost on the ice in Greenland, but it is the airframe, you know, at least it's the data plate, of
yeah, yeah.
Which is a whole other conversation, but
yeah,
you know. It is what it is, and it's amazing that, like you said, the technology is there to go get this stuff. and then to preserve it, whether they preserve it as it is, they're laying on the ground, laying on the ocean floor, or whether they pull it up and repair it to some static display. It can be done. It just takes cubic dollars, as they say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. That's for certain. That's for certain. Now, I keep looking also at the airplanes that were recovered from Lake Michigan. I mean, we had the Hellcat that was recovered just last year, and of course the Wildcats that were recovered. Many of those airplanes were completely restored using a lot of original parts. Now, granted, it's freshwater, but the chances of being able to recover them and to, you know, put them back into even flying condition are still pretty darn good, depending on where you get it from. Obviously, in this case, it's probably going to be a little bit different being that saltwater environment. But, you know, there's a lot of potential there. So,
sure, we should see.
We're down to our last few minutes of the show, but we've still got the phone lines open, folks. And heck, if you call right now, we're giving away free CAF bumper stickers to any of our callers that call in. We'll mail them to you. Again, if you want a bumper sticker from the Commemorative Air Force for free, give us a call, 478-787-4768. And no, you do not have to be a current member or colonel of the CAF, but they would love it if you were or became one. We would be happy to take your call, 478-787-4768, to talk Warbirds for our last couple of minutes here. I haven't been keeping up with the board, unfortunately, as much as some folks like yourself do this week, Zane. But any other things that come to mind that you popped up, came up on your search this past week at all?
Well, there's a continuing thread of a little bit of excitement on the Thunder Over Michigan 2011 show.
Just seeing it.
And Doug Matthews has added his F4U for Corsair to the mix, and apparently his Silver Star Canadian T-33 is going to be there as well. So the lineup is going to be is growing all the time for that show. It would be great to see apparently the Guardian is up there, has been painted, and it'll be out on display. So that's a little bit of news there. I don't think it's going to be a flyer yet, but apparently it's going to be static display. You never know between now and the end of August what they can do. But so that's a little bit. I know our buddy Mustang driver Chris is planning a road trip across the country, and he's put that up there, and it makes me jealous. I'd love to do this, but they're going to go to the SAC Museum, the Cosmosphere, going to be down here in our area at the Cavanaugh Museum. Across to your neck of the woods, to Amarc and Pima Air Museum, and off into California. So apparently they're going to – I guess Zach and him are going to drive cross country and airplane themselves or museum themselves to death. So look for that worldwide tour going on as well. And
I'm wondering
maybe it'll coincide with Matt Jolly's L-Bird tour. He's got apparently still got plans to go on tour as well. I haven't heard much about it lately, but
well,
look at that. You know,
yeah.
Well, Matt's going to need seat cushion money for sure. So
yeah, well, you know, maybe if it was tied together, you know, you'd have aerial support, and you know, that way you could, you know, be able to spot and see any traffic ahead of them, and they, you know, clear the way and make, you know, alternate routes. It's kind of like you know, Patton's tanker group, you know, rolling through Europe and having the observation airplanes, you know, be able to clear the way ahead, or at least point them in the right direction.
There you go, Pathfinders.
The Germans are over there.
I think we can get a laser designator for them. So yeah.
Very. No, maybe. But
here locally, I know that the Pate Museum, which was a long time small museum out here in Crescent, Texas, just south of Fort Worth, that closed last year, has some of their artifacts are going away that belong to the aviation or National Museum of the Air Force, but their F-101B model Voodoo was moved last weekend from Pate Museum over to the Ham Museum in Tyler for static display.
Oh, very good. So, very good.
It is on – there's photographs of it on Wix rolling through the streets of Hillsboro, Texas, and sight to see. They moved it complete. They didn't take it apart, and it's in Tyler ready to go. So – They're, you know, he who comes up with the best bucket of cash gets some say-so on the paint job on it. So, you know, they're looking for money as well.
Great museum there. And speaking of of airplanes on roads, you know, in our last wrap-up minute, big mystery that just got posted today. There was a warbird sighting on a semi rolling through Illinois yesterday on the I-74 in the central Illinois. It was on the morning of 4:13. One of our members saw that. They saw just one engine, a radial engine, on the trailer, and a prop was attached. But it was a faded olive drab fuselaged aircraft. So if anybody knows anything that's going eastbound on the I-74 through central Illinois that's going to a new home somewhere on the East Coast, we'd love to have you let us know. You can either post it to the Warbird Radio message board for this show, or you can go on Wix and post it there. You'll see the post up on the page. Or you can put it on our Facebook page, for that matter, and let us know. So it'll be interesting to see what that airplane was and where it's going to be going to. And and also a last little tidbit, some great photos of the National Museum of Naval Aviation, the Coronado project that they're working on right now, the last of its type of this large seaplanes, flying boats. That's on Wix too. Go there and see it. But until next week, folks, from Zane and myself, we wish you a good night, and thank you very much for tuning in to Wix Warbird Weekly Live here on Warbird Radio.